the session titled Sharing Life Stories and Empowerment, Seasons of Life, Transitions. My name is Howard Thorsheim.
And my name is Julie Thorsheim.
I'm a licensed consulting psychologist and teach psychology at St. Olaf College, working in the areas of life story, story sharing, and empowerment.
And I work as a psychiatric social worker in Minneapolis in inpatient adolescent work.
One of the reasons this topic makes a lot of sense to me is for some personal reasons. Some 20 years ago, I had an industrial job which involved some explosions, which I sort of experienced and put behind me as part of the work. And then about, I suppose 2 or 3 years ago, I started hearing from people that, I was hearing things that the words that people mentioned were not very clear. But I thought, well, it's a noisy environment, and I thought probably I just needed to listen a little more carefully. Finally, this summer, I had a hearing test after this last spring, having students of mine, for example, say something, and I would say, "What did you say?" And they would look at me like, "Did I say the wrong thing?" And I thought, well, what was going on? And then I realized that I wasn't hearing what they were saying. So I had a hearing test this summer and found that at just not too long ago, that at the 4,000 cycle per seconds and higher, right about where the P's, T's, F's, S's sounds are, I hear about 1/64th normal hearing. So if I say, "Pardon me tonight," or "Would you repeat that?" It's just that I missed it. I just didn't hear it. So I find that words like food could be food or good or, you know, sometimes, particularly if there's a little noisy background. So that's a season of life for me, a transition that I was surprised by, that I didn't plan on, that my hearing would be changing that dramatically. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to get a couple of good hearing aids, and it's going to help, and I'm going to be able to hear better. But I don't hear so well consonant sounds. Other things I hear pretty well, but not the consonant sounds very much at all. So that's a transition for me.
In terms of setting the tone for transition seasons of life, I went to this marvelous library here at Holden and, among other things, pulled out a couple of Herbert Brokering's books of poetry. I particularly love this one, God So Loved, that has this marvelous photography by somebody named Weygandt, along with many of his poems. And I would like to read two of his, which focus on...
Repeat the last name again.
Herbert Brokering, B-R-O-K-E-R-I-N-G, and I think it's Naomi Weygandt, the photographer. And
she's from Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, she is. Yes.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah,
Sister Naomi. I didn't know where she was from. This one, the other poetry book is his also, and the other one is called Lord If. This one from God So Loved. By the cycles of the seasons, by dumbfounding of all reasons, comes the message of salvation in a beauty constellation. In the patterns of reflection, in the moments of introspection, comes the message of salvation by a reinterpretation. So is grace an incarnation of a constant information.
I think it's neat the way they talk. It's, rather than talking about introspection, he talks about the viewing with one another.
Interospection.
Between yeah. I've never heard that used that way. That's interesting.
And this other Brokering poem. Lord, if breeze can come and go with constant seasons in between, and meadows can break into a solid blue, and storms can go completely out of sight, then I will say yes more easily and marvel at the unraveling of creation and the unveiling of your grace. As we approach this topic of seasons of life and transitions, we thought of a number of different kinds of transitions that occur to us. We thought it would be especially helpful to us if those of you here would offer to us your thoughts. When you saw the title posted, what occurred to you? What transitions in your life or common transitions we as humans go through occurred to you? Anyone? Offer us some ideas here, would you please?
Children leaving the nest.
Okay. A common experience to all parents.
Return.
I'm going to repeat these,
and,
I think.
And return?
No.
Oh, retirement.
Okay. Over here was children leaving the nest.
Retirement.
50.
Turning 50.
60.
Turning 60. I would say turning 40, too.
Okay.
Other transitions.
Job changes.
Along with that, moves to another part of the country.
Returning to school.
Loss of spouse.
Marriage, that's a transition time. How about
parents becoming ill?
Yeah. Okay. Needing to parent. And sometimes that means only looking after the older generation. Sometimes it means being sandwiched right in the middle between two generations, one younger and one older, with many needs.
Also, when both parents are deceased, then you're the oldest in the family. You're the repository
okay.
of the family history.
Very well said. Becoming the older generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A number of people have written on that subject, that particularly the death of the second parent, what it does psychologically.
The repository of family history?
Of family history.
Becoming the repository of family history.
Chronic illness.
And
general health.
Okay. Realizing you're growing older. Yeah. Development of a disability. Other thoughts are really close to that. A drastic change in income, family income, personal income. Certainly a transition. Is any major area we have left out, or does that list look like it includes?
Divorce.
Oh, another then that would follow on that the heels of that would be remarriage, blending families. And that would be true whether or not there are children. There are always sisters-in-law, brothers.
Having children after a when you're a couple and you have children, I don't think that's on there, is it?
Having children. Yes, we talked about them leaving home, but we presupposed they'd already had them. Yeah.
Jude, I don't know okay. if it's exactly, I'll say it long, but maybe the time when you realize, you're younger, you have the goals and objectives, at some point in time you get to the middle, you realize you're not going to achieve those goals and objectives, say professionally. It's a transition then as you go from maybe the idealist or something to maybe the realist.
Okay.
I suppose changing goals or objectives or something.
psychological transition in adjusting goals. Okay, real good. Before we formally began, I circulated a few books around here, and one of them I just bought yesterday. I'm not positive if I'm getting the title right, but it was something like How to Survive the Loss of a Love. And that was talking not only about personal love relationships, but this thing about losing a job or changing goals and different things. And that book points out that even some of the happy changes in our lives can be stressful, like having a goal and reaching it can be a downer for a person, because then they think, well, is there anything left? That kind of change, too. We've come up with a very long list here.
Good ideas. In a little bit, we'd like to invite you to share something of your story with another person, so that you may wish to think about that in the meantime. But before we do that, we've asked Robert and Jan Nairn, who are here at Holden, and whom we've gotten to know this last week, and for those of you who are just coming, we'll get to know part of their story, and they have said that they'd be willing to do that. They've experienced some transitions and some changes, and whatever they'd care to share with us, we'd be much appreciative. Robert and Jan, would you be willing to share with us a little bit about what you've been doing and what's great? You want to come up here so that folks can see you a little easier? Maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to.
I really don't know where to start. But I thought it might be useful if we started, I'd give our backgrounds of where we came from, you know, where we're at, as it were. And then maybe you could ask us questions. Basically, I was brought up in Scotland. All the male people in my family for four generations have been accountants, chartered accountants. So I, by an accident of birth, I'm an accountant. I was trained as such, qualified, and emigrated to New Zealand. Refer to it, all in my late 20s, refer to it as being sent by my family as the black sheep of the family to the colonies. In New Zealand, I initially worked on a farm, my cousin's farm, a sheep farm, and then got a job as an accountant, and there I worked on the same job for 13 years, and during that period I met Jan, and we had our three daughters there, and perhaps Jan now could tell you how she got to New Zealand, and then we'll take it up from there.
Well, my life is a series of transitions, so for me, maybe talking about transitions is talking about what's normal rather than what's abnormal. I moved around a lot. I, by an accident of geography, was born in Michigan, though that has nothing to do really with who I am or anything. We kept moving on. My father was first in the ministry in the Southern Church, non-affiliated Churches of Christ, the most fundamentalist group possible that you can imagine. He went back to university. That involved us in many moves. We kept moving on until we got to Oregon and couldn't go any further without getting our feet wet. And so we got on a boat and went to New Zealand. And that's how I got to New Zealand. I completed university there, became a teacher, taught for 3 years, and got married and left teaching as quickly as possible. I was raised to be a teacher by my father, and that wasn't too good of an idea either. So that gets us both together in New Zealand.
Okay, why did we decide to leave New Zealand? We decided after we'd had our three daughters, when they were aged 5, our eldest was 5 and our youngest was 2, we decided we didn't want to have them grow up and be educated in New Zealand, for many reasons. So we assumed that eventually we would settle in Britain or the United States for their education. But we decided we'd try and see a bit of the world beforehand. I should say, transition at that time was very difficult for me because I'd really been pretty stuck as an accountant in the same job for many years and didn't like moving around. But Jen's expertise in transition eventually got to me. So we left New Zealand, went to Western Samoa. We did have a job to go to when we went to Western Samoa, and we worked there for 2 years. And then when we left Western Samoa, we were just kind of on the loose. We traveled through the States, visited Jen's parents and her brother. Got a temporary job in Los Angeles for a month or so. And then we headed over to Britain and visited my relatives, settling ultimately in London for 2 or 3 weeks. Then I got a month. Then I got a job in Africa, in Somalia, much to Jen's chagrin. She was wanting to go to Kathmandu. I think I had applied for 2 jobs. One was Kathmandu and the other one was Somalia, and the Somali one came up first.
By 2 hours.
We went there for a year. And then went back to London for 7 months, and at that time decided to come to the States. Out of about 7 cities that we looked at seriously, we moved to Albuquerque, mainly because Braniff's fares were less expensive than anybody else's at the time.
Well, also because we had a dog and Laker wouldn't take it. So
we went to Albuquerque, where we spent the last 9 years. And our kids are now aged 18, 16, and 14. Jennifer, the eldest, has graduated, and the other two will be attending school here. And that kind of brings us up to date, except that in Albuquerque I had a job. It took me about 6 weeks to get a job in Albuquerque, which was kind of scary. And then I worked for a television company there as their controller for 3 years. And then we kind of drifted into having our own business, which was very... it took up a lot of our time and was really terrible, dreadful.
All-consuming.
All-consuming, yes. And during our 5 years in business there, our pastor was a pastor called Dan Erlander, and which is our connection with Holden. We came to Holden, first of all, as guests. Then we were on teaching staff 5 years ago for 3 weeks, teaching drama, and then we visited again as guests, but we hadn't been here for four and a half years, something like that, until we came last October. 5 years ago, when we were here in teaching staff, we had investigated the possibilities of coming to Holden, moving to Holden for 2 or more years, but that had got dropped, partly because Dan Erlander advised us that he mentioned to us that Holden was not the best place for family life, and he felt that perhaps our children at that time were a bit younger, that families, you didn't have a family life eating communally, etc., etc. As you probably noticed, you never see your kids those years, I mean, at home. And this was an ongoing thing that went throughout the whole year to some extent. So, but we still had in the back of our mind that we would like to move to Holden. Last October we came up to a retreat here, and at that point of time decided that whatever happened, come what may, we would apply for a position here. And if we got one, we'd give up whatever we had in Albuquerque and come here. And that's how we're here. Now, I don't know that we went through any great decision process. What have we? Would you like to add to that now?
Oh, give me the hard part, huh? Well, you can tell from the comment about Braniff and the dog that some of our decision-making isn't awfully intentional. And maybe coming to Holden wasn't either, except that it was something we considered over a long period of time, and when we finally decided that we would, you know, pursue coming here and that we would try whatever happened to get out of the business, that was a pretty intentional decision. it was strongly motivated because the business was very soul-destroying in many ways.
Soul-destroying.
What kind of business?
Ah.
We sold computer systems to the construction industry.
Could you say more about this, the soul-destroying feelings?
Well, it's in several levels. First of all, it did totally consume our time. And we mentioned teaching drama. We had both been actors in the past, and acting was squeezed out. It was something we never did anymore. We had little time for our family. We had been very active in various peace and justice issues. That was squeezed out. That never happened anymore. We also were involved in many compromises in the business. When you're selling software to the construction industry in New Mexico, you are implicated at a number of levels in the industry of New Mexico, which is basically the defense industry. So it was impossible to pursue that without, in some sense, compromising your ideals. So yeah, it was many levels. Can you think of other levels of this?
No, not offhand.
Well, I would think you have had a lot of, you know, you said not that much in decision-making, but it seems each one of those moves involved massive decision-making. I mean, just moving to Somalia is not something you just say, let's get on a plane, go. It just seems to me you're not the average, you haven't led the average life of the average American family that's moved really internationally. It just seems each one of your decisions was some tremendous decision making, taking into account economics and your whole family life, as well as then the transition of going from the life of a civilized, relatively civilized London to Somalia, and then to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you underplayed the decision making when you said, "Well, there weren't the decision." I saw millions of decisions that you had to make.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the decision to leave New Zealand was very intentional, and that involved some real decision-making. And whether we were right or wrong in the things that we decided to do, or whether our expectations when we did it are fulfilled, or beside the point, that did involve some great decision-making. However, once you're on the move...
you're on a roll.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Any idea what you're going to do next?
No.
One
thing that I found that through these moves, it was a lot easier to let go of, and I don't want this to sound terribly something or other, but to let go of material things insofar as when we moved from... New Zealand to Samoa. We took quite a few of our things with us. When we moved from Samoa to the States and ultimately to London, I think we got rid of more of them. We had a terrible experience at once of all our stuff being on three continents, which seemed so stupid to worry about. So we got kind of used to the idea of just selling everything. When we moved, when we went to Somalia, we bought stuff and took it there. When we left Somalia, we sold it all before we left Somalia. And we did the same kind of thing in London. We did the same in Albuquerque, which is kind of a relief to be able to do that. We were horrified in Albuquerque how much we'd accumulated in just 9 years.
Yeah.
But we don't know what we're going to do when we leave here. Mm-hmm. We can cover that later, yes.
I've often thought about that kind of... moving about lifestyle, and felt like my own family would be horrified if I suggested it. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know how your kids have reacted to moving from place to place, and especially living in really strange places.
I suppose the major move that we did really involve them in mm-hmm. was the one from Albuquerque to here. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, they were a bit younger.
Yeah,
we just were going, and that's it. But when we made the decision that we wanted to move to Holden, Our eldest had already voiced to us that she would like to come here next summer. That was this summer, as a volunteer in our own right. So
That was helpful.
Well, basically, what we had to cover with Jennifer was the fact that we weren't just trying to follow her suit, and that that we wanted her to feel that she was still getting, or she was still leaving and starting up her own life at age 18 as much as you can, and that she would be on staff in her own right separately from us. The other two we discussed. Discussed the possibility of coming to Holton at great length with them.
We were a bit apprehensive when we made the decision. Then told them about it. We were anticipating some resistance. I guess we would have been prepared to override a certain level of resistance. Possibly not total all-out resistance. We might not have been prepared to override that at the age they were. Yeah. We were pleasantly surprised that they were very willing. There was no negative reaction initially. Later on, our youngest daughter, who you've all probably all seen around the village, she's a little blonde 14-year-old, if you can't help, missed her probably. She's the comedian of the family, came up with this phrase that they're taking me to a monastery for the rest of high school. However, considering the fact that she's been surrounded by three or four boys ever since June the 10th when she arrived here, I think she may have changed her opinion.
Rebecca, our 16-year-old, was the one that we were most concerned with, because she's basically going into her senior year in the school here. And we thought that for her to change and leave her friends at this point of time might be distressing to her. But she didn't seem to mind as much as we thought she would.
There was a major sacrifice involved. She had been asked to be the editor of her school yearbook this year, in her senior year, and I think that's kind of a real important thing. And so that would be our only regret on that level. Socially, yes, she's given up a lot, but you know, one can't help feeling that that would have been a very important thing for her to be able to do. So it's not without sacrifice.
See, with all the moves that you've made, you've not apparently you've not established a lot of roots, and I'm intrigued about your comments. You're not sure where you're going from this point on, and so forth. Does that bother you? And if not, I would be intrigued as to you know, why it doesn't. Certainly, that's not a criticism. I'm just very interested in
National family, what? What kind of roots?
Of course, a lot of us feel a need to really put down roots and stay and develop identity with organizations and so forth. And you apparently have not felt that way, and that's very intriguing to me. Would you comment on that?
For me, it's no change. Maybe it would be better if Robert comments on it, because it's something I've never had. So,
I think we've always developed roots wherever we've been, as far as getting involved with organizations. Initially, I found it very difficult, and to a certain extent still do now. You get established in a certain area, whether it be through the organizations or what have you, and then when you move, it's kind of horrifying for me the first two or three times to have to establish myself again, as it were, or establish us, that you had nothing, no roots, if you like, to fall back on. That, you know, you could be, you could have certain achievements in a particular area, which when you moved to a new area, nobody knew about, so you didn't have any achievements, so you just had to go on your face value, as it were. And that was kind of horrifying for me, because I can go way back to the beginnings of my family where, talking about roots, my father had never ever left Scotland. We went to the same holiday resort every year for our summer vacations, not only for all of my childhood, but for all of my father's childhood. So that even going to, when we went on summer vacations, I had a certain importance because I was my father's son, you know, my name made me acceptable in that community. So that was a bit different.
It is, as Robert describes it, once you get to be an adult, and I moved around the whole time I was growing up, too. It wasn't until we moved from New Zealand, and I had lived a long time in this small town of Martin, which is where we married and had our children, that you first realize that a move means a change of identity. And that is probably the most shattering thing about it, and that was an important one, was that change as far as my identity was concerned, because I was just, as Robert said, there's nothing. You've got to completely reestablish yourself, not only to others, but in some cases to yourself. So that's perhaps the biggest thing about it, which even a lot of experience moving doesn't help you with a great deal.
Want to, at this point, thank you two for sharing so much of your transitions and your life and being so open with us. Want to thank, let's thank
you.
Thank
you.
Howard, can I ask him one more question?